Like, you look behind me, you see an outlet. You see a little cat hair on my hat. This is me. This is not some, I'm not freaking AI. And people know that I'm not freaking AI because of those things.
All right. Yeah.
That's one of the key things because people, they find out it's AI, they just turn it off.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Space Tomatoes Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Havoc.
I'm the other guy, LX. Hello, welcome back. All those things. And
today we have a repeat guest back with us. It's Russell Van Brocklin, a dyslexia professor out of New York.
Albany, New York. I'm nowhere near that crazy place downstate.
It's not all the same. I thought the whole state was just that.
I live in a small town. I'm looking out on a lake right now. I'm not down in the crazy place in New York City.
Oh, good. I don't know how people do that, honestly. There's so much stimulus there. It is amazingly uncomfortable for me.
I go down there to present at the Everyone Reading Conference every year. And let me just give you a quick story about New York City. A couple of years ago, I really tried to get good hotel deals. There was a Hyatt Place, like a block away from this, the City University of New York Graduate Center where the conference was held. I paid $113 all in.
Wow.
All right. Really comfortable. People were shocked I could afford the place because they didn't know how I paid. When I told them how much I paid, they went crazy because they were paying a lot more for a lot worse place. I got up the next day. I had a really good breakfast. It's an extraordinary hotel for it. It's 2.5 stars, but for that, it's the best in the 2.5 star range. Then I tried to book it the next year. Before taxes, it was $429.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the normal price for the place. So, yeah. Not to mention, I didn't do that. I went down in the morning. I did what I had to do, and I came back. I just wasn't going to spend that type of money.
Just grab the Acela Express, right?
Oh, we don't get that. I've come down from Albany. So here's the thing. State capital of New York, its unofficial nickname is Smallbany because there's one street that's like a half a street that looks like a city. But the Albany Rensselaer train station is one of the 10 busiest in the country. So we had the head of the Senate for, you know, about 15 years ago, and he rebuilt it. It's magnificent, but it takes 2 hours and 40 minutes to go down, 2 hours and 40 minutes to come back. And it's a long day to do that.
Oh, yeah, that is. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah, I've got my own hotel stories. I remember my first time in New York on business travel, so it wasn't my money, but the hotel was like $600+. This is well over a decade ago. And I come into this courtyard by Marriott. It's in
courtyard, $600.
It's in Times Square, and mm-hmm. I go and check into my room. I open the door and I see a bed, and I walk in and there's literally a bed and about a foot of clearance on each side of the bed. Okay. There's a little stand up wardrobe that you can't open the doors to all the way because they contact the bed. But anyway, so that was my first experience. And I remember very clearly, I'd slept maybe 20 minutes that night because of the noise and the light. And even with the blackout curtains closed, it was just, blown away.
Anybody going there now, there's something called a pod hotel. It's much cheaper. It's around $100-$150 a night. All right. Get a room away from the street, pay retail. Don't go through a discount site so you can get a room away from the street. And it's a shoebox, but it's much cheaper. Mm-hmm. All right. What you want to do is put a noisemaker on your fan and put that up and put in those earplugs that do the 33 decibel things. That works. But today you wanted to talk about artificial intelligence.
Absolutely. And, we'd love to hear how you're making use of that in your work, how you're using it to improve your life, and, you know, how that is used to help people with, you know, learning disabilities, dyslexia in particular.
Well, just so everybody knows what it is that I do with this. I'm going to give an example of a student who I'm working with. His name is Grayson. I'd like you to tell me how old you think he is. Grayson's not dyslexic in the least. He's in the 99th percentile in math and science. He wants to get his PhD and work at NASA to terraform Mars. Grayson, we found an academic journal where he needs to publish in to do that. And they do accept submissions from junior researchers, which they pretty much peg as PhD candidates. How old do you think Grayson is?
I'm going to go with 16.
He's 10.
Oh, wow. That's quite amazing. I mean,
we're hoping to have him submit an article by the time he's 14. Okay, so AI is going to be critical in that aspect. But I'm not going to tell you how I deal with students because they're very restrictive. But for adults, I just had a transformation that I'm seeing all these people saying that they're having AI do things for them overnight. I'm like, what the hell? What is this? So the first thing that I need to tell you is just my background with AI. When on December of 2024, ChatGPT had its 12 days of Christmas, whatever stuff, and they came out with ChatGPT Pro, which at that point was $200. And people were shocked because they're used to $20 a month. I bought it that day. I used it through December, and then I canceled it and I moved over to Anthropic because I found the $20 thing on ChatGPT thinking was, I got it up to 5-10 minutes, and that's all I really needed. And I was like, I'm not going to spend another 10 times that amount when I got good enough for me. So, and then I finally, about a week ago, I said, I want to do what these top 1% people are doing. And it's not exactly what top 1%, but to me, it's close enough. I'm not one of those guys that is killing myself to be on AI 8-10 hours a day. I'm doing it to do twice, three times as much work as what a normal person would do. And I'm using the rest of the time to, you know, have a life and to do podcasts and that sort of thing. So here's what I basically did. First thing that you're going to need to do is I'm going to tell you, these are the 10 things that you're generally going to need to do. And you're going to want to replay this to write all this stuff down. But here they are. These are generally the top 10 things that the top 1% generally do. They treat AI like a team member. It's not a freaking search engine. All right? So you're using this to do real work, to have agents do real work. I do that through Coworker. That is Claude Coworker. But my instructions and the thinking, I use ChatGPT 5.4 thinking extended. Okay. Number two, you build memory and continuity. So what I mean by that is you need to get on Claude Opus 4.6. That's their best model. Yes, you're not going to get away with $20 a month. After you start getting used to this, you're probably going to spend at least 100. But this is why you need to get on Opus 4.6 for at least a month. What I did is I've been on it for several months, and this has allowed me, when I had to start asking questions, unlike any other AI platform, it can go and search and see what I'm doing right, what I'm doing wrong, and it can actually answer the questions. So, like, for example, I had a client that I have to do customized work for. He wants to be it's a college kid who wants to go into sports recruiting. So I said, okay, I did a fourth Harvard Business School case study like him. Pull all those up. Now, what do you think the fifth one should be? And we go back and forth with that. Okay, it can just remember things nobody else can. All right, number three, you put tasks together. Okay, don't do this little thing, and this little thing. I'm trying to combine tasks so I can get the agent to run about 30 to 45 minutes. I find that's about the optimum time before I recheck in and run it through ChatGPT 5.4 Thinking Extended. And then what I do there is I'll put it back there and say, how do we do? What changes do you want to see? Okay, now tell me in an exhausted narrative, every change you want to see to the smallest detail. Then I'll say, for the prompt, give me a prompt to have Opus 4.6 co-work actually do this and write it out so it covers everything. But look at what the best engineering prompt. Before I have it run any prompt, I don't expect it to remember things. I say, look it up again. What are the best steps to write the most effective prompts? And then it does that, and I have them combine it. And then I just send it back to Cowork and it runs it again. And then I just go back and forth until ChatGPT 5.4 Thinking Extended thinks that it's done. All right. Other thing, number four, people use AI to prepare, not just to produce. So before I get on any podcast, I will actually ask like 12 questions, that 12 standard questions that I came up, and I'll say, run this through. I'll take our PodMatch discussion and I'll dump it in. I'll say, run through this. So I actually know what the podcaster is generally looking for, where they're coming from. So I can take what I'm looking to do and to customize it to their needs. Okay. The fifth thing is people do is they create reusable prompts and systems. So if you're doing the same thing over and over again, you want to go and you want to put this into a project folder and keep all of this stuff here. So you can just say, this is what we're going to do this again, run it through this. And it already has all that memory. So you don't have to keep retyping the same freaking thing in again and again. Number six, people correctly use AI and they make it to help them learn. And they have AI learn from their own mistakes. So for example, after you get done with these 10 things, what I would do is I took this over to ChatGPT 5.4 Extended Thinking, and I would say, I want you to come up with a list of questions that can help me figure out what I'm doing right and what I'm doing wrong. And it came up with 196 questions over 16 areas. Then this is why you have to spend at least a month in Opus 4.6. I went back to Opus 4.6 and I said, I want you to answer these questions. Look through all our conversational history. Again, the other ones can't do this. And it came back and answered them. Then I'll take those answers and I went back to ChatGPT 5.4 Thinking Extended. And I said, here's the answers you wanted. Does that change the questions you want to ask for the next group? And they would say yes. And then I put those next ones in, but I put them in 10 questions at a time. And then I would bring it back. And I kept doing that until it created, until we went through about half the questions. And then I opened up a new conversation, but in the same project. And then I would ask Opus 4.6 to take everything and to put it into a Word document. So I have two sets of questions, and each one's about 60,000 words. All right. Once that was done, I would then put it all that into a new ChatGPT 5.4 Extended Thinking, and I would say a new window, and I'd say, go ahead and create this. Then would create my process, and then I would ask, then I would test it out, like I'm testing it out on my book that's coming out, and I test it out a few times, make the recommended changes, then everything that I do runs through that. All right. Number seven, people use AI for the boring stuff so that they don't focus on the human stuff. Okay. Data entry, schedule, reframing. Spent all the time doing this boring stuff. Have ChatGPT, have Opus 4.6 Cowork do this for you. All right. So, for example, I have to go and set up a time to set up a podcast. I pick the time. So, what I do is I basically use this workflow. I will tell Cowork on Opus to find days that I have nothing going on or one thing going on. And then I'll say, match it up with what the podcaster has available. And then I would pick a day and I spread things apart. I want to have between noon and 4 o'clock free so I can go to the YMCA and swim for an hour, hour and a half. All right. So it'll find those dates and then I'll find a time that fits for me. Then I pick that. Then I tell it to book it. And honestly, it takes a while to do this, but I can have 4 or 5 things going at the same time. So if it takes longer, who cares? It gets it done. That allows me to spend more time actually being on podcasts and speaking to people. All right. People also combine AI with their own expertise. So what you want to do is find out what is your specialty? What is your area of extreme interest and ability? What are you really, really good at? And you want to feed that into specific projects. This is your secret sauce. This is what you're better at. And that's why you want to use this for Opus 4.6 for at least a month, because as you're going through these, you know, quite frankly, when I was done, it was over 400 questions. It can take your unique skill set and everything you have and put it into this one general service document. For me, that runs about 5,000 pages. Number 9, it allows you to move faster than everybody around you. So a lot of people are literally working at this more than less. They used to put in 8-hour days. Now they're putting in 10, 12-hour days. They're being 5, 10x more effective, more productive than everybody else. Honestly, I don't do that. I use this to do 2-3 times as much work as most people would do in 8 hours 5 years ago. And then I take the rest of the time to have, you know, a life. All right. And finally, people are not afraid to look weird using it. Okay, what do I mean by that? Opus just came out with this thing, and I'm just starting to get to use it, where you can actually tell it, or I can actually tell it on the phone to keep doing things. So I'll be out at a social event. I'll go in the corner, get on my phone, and I'll say, Opus, okay, go do this, and I'll run for 45 minutes, then I'll check on it for 5 minutes to tell us the next step. People ask me, what I'm doing? I said, well, I'm getting a lot of work done. And yes, I'm taking 5 minutes out of every 45 to do that. But it just allows so much more stuff to get done. So that's the general overview.
All right. So you're using it really to tailor documentation and I mean, you essentially you're using it as a personal assistant, but also as something that will help you gather research, tailor a document and process possibly, and, you know, put that out. Is that a correct
assumption? Yeah, let me try to, I was kind of, being the dyslexic I am, I was trying to go through the 10 rules and the 10 major things and discuss it along the way, so it gets kind of scattershot. What I basically did is you take those 10 rules that I just gave you, and you type them out, and then you go to ChatGPT 5.4 thinking extended. Yes, you need to spend $20 a month on this, and then leave it not on thinking, but extended thinking. And people are going to shout out, but it took 7 minutes to get an answer. Yes, but it's a good answer. I'm doing this for work, not a hobby. Okay, so right. It goes ahead, and I have multiple ones of these things going. I usually do 3 things at once, typically, at least 2. All right, so while it's doing its thing, I'm doing other things. All right, I'm just not sitting there waiting for it. So as it goes through, then I say, how many questions do you have for me to go through this? And I use Anthropic Claude Coworker to do the work. But I use ChatGPT 5.4 thinking extended to do the thinking and to write the prompt. Okay, so for me, it came up to a list of 196 questions over 16 areas. I don't know how much it'll come up for you, but you want to be on Opus 4.6 for at least a month. Then you take those questions and you put them in 10 at a time and you have them answer it. And then once you're done answering all the questions in that section, bring it back to ChatGPT for 5.4 extended thinking and say, here's the answers you wanted. Do you want to change the next set of questions? Which it will. And you do that until the whole thing is done. I had to split it up into multiple conversations because it was just getting too long. Once you have all the answers, then you say, okay, go ahead and create my customized process. And it'll do that. then you need to test it out on some of your documents. I did a 3 test before I started using this. Now, every time I do anything, I put in this 5,000-word document. It knows the mistakes that I normally make. It knows what my strong points are. And it just keeps me from making the same stupid crap over and over again. So when I have a customized document that I need to create, this goes through and it gets it much closer. Now, once the document is done, then I bring it back to 5.4 extended thinking on ChatGPT, and I'll say, how did we do? And then it'll tell me, and I'll say, okay, what changes do you want to make? Tell me in an exhaustive narrative to the final detail to get to 100%. And it will do that. Then every time I'll tell it, redo internet research to figure out how to write the best prompt instructions for, in this case, Claude Cowork using Opus 4.6. All right, then it'll go ahead, figure that out, apply what it wrote out exactly, and write out the prompt. I copy it, I dump it into Cowork, and I have to check on it every so often because sometimes, you know, Cowork wants to ask permission every 2 seconds, which I tell it not to do. I just say, go do it, and it still does it so often until it's done. And then I run it back through ChatGPT until it's done, and then I ship it out.
All right. So how do you counteract what, so, you know, as part of work, I use AI quite frequently. Mm-hmm. It's kind of ingrained in what we do and yada, yada. But how do you counteract, especially with this much information being, you know, gathered together and put into a format, how do you counteract the AI hallucinations? Where it will, hey, I can't find an answer, but, you know, this is similar, so I'll go ahead and just create an answer out of this. Or maybe I got a hold of some reference that wasn't, you know, related to the topic at hand, but it seems similar enough, and I'm going to give you a very confident answer about something that is absolutely incorrect.
I can't even get it to tell me what battery my key fob on my car remote uses sometimes. It tells me the wrong one, and then I open it up and like, man, that ain't what it said.
Well, to be honest with you, number one, I'm an expert in what I do. So I just run it through. I don't even look at it until ChatGPT 5.4 thinking extended. And honestly, when I do the extended thinking and then I have the work done on a different AI, between the two, I'm finding the hallucinations are down to virtually nothing. Okay. But after it says it's done or close enough, I get it. When it gets to about 95%, I just stopped working on it. Then I'd read it over. And if I spot something, I'm like, yeah, good one. You missed this. Or, yeah, where the heck did this happen? And then I'll let it know. And it's like, yeah, my bad. And it goes and tells it. We go through the process until it's fixed. But again, I don't do the final review until it says it's ready to go. But most of the time, honestly, it's maybe 1 in 10, 2 in 10 that I have to call it out on any of that stuff. So you're the human. You just can't ship what the AI tells you. But right. I get it to what it calls essentially a final draft, and then I send it out. The other thing is people working with me know that I'm dyslexic. I'm dyslexic as hell. Okay. So I ship, the people are happy what I'm sending them, but a lot of times, like when I'm doing anything on the internet or stuff, I will just go and have it change. And I have a web expert and he checks it twice a week. And you know, any little minor changes he'll fix. I kind of got that idea from Cursor. They just ship things like every 5 hours. Like you start working with them at breakfast. The same model is different when you're doing things at dinner time. It literally changes every 5 hours. So the little stuff that they fix when I'm doing online courses, I ship it to the instructors who are teaching it. And they tell me that the stuff I'm shipping them now is like 85, 90% there. And they make whatever changes that they want to finally fix things. Humans have to be the final people to look around. But for me, I'm under the idea of just make sure it's run 85, 90%, ship it out there. And if one of my customers is going to complain because I didn't put a comma in the right place, well, fine. Go to my competitors. Have a nice day. I'm not that guy. If you're that crazy, then I don't want to work with you. Next.
Nice. Okay. So you're primarily using it for your own internal processes, projects, documentation, et cetera. Are you using it with, you know, your students at all? Are you having them?
Here's the thing when it comes to AI. I don't want the kids using AI until they can write probably around the 9th or 10th grade level for real. I don't want them touching it. I want this done all by hand because you need to learn how. It's kind of like an example I like to give people. I was really good math student in high school. Okay. I wasn't the best of the best, but I was a very good student, you know, through geometry, trig, algebra. And then I went into calculus-based physics. Okay. And from there, early 90s, we had those graphical calculators. Yeah, my father was fun with that one. He's like, $300 for a damn calculator with 8 megs of RAM, 8 megabytes of memory. I said, yeah. So then we started using the graphical calculators, but if we didn't understand the principles of how this worked, you know, I just remember what my professor said. Somebody complained, well, the rich kids can have these 8 megabytes. He's like, can we bring in some worksheets with some formulas on it? He said, you know what? For those who want it, I will give you the exam in my office. It's not for 3 hours. I'll give you 8. Bring in your textbook. Bring in anything you want. Bring in anything but Uncle Bob. He said, it's not going to make a damn bit of difference. You know how to apply it or you don't. So at that point, it made sense for us to have the machine start doing the work. But if we didn't understand the principles, we couldn't apply it. We would flunk. So with AI, until you understand how to write, you know, 9th, 10th grade level and read at the 9th, 10th grade level, I don't think the kids should go near it. And then I love when teachers tell me this, but then the kids are going to be far behind. I'm like, no, because you don't have a freaking idea how to use AI anyway. And that I don't tell that to their faces, but they have no freaking idea how to use AI for education. So again, what I said I'm using is the craft of research. So let me again explain what that is. Context is to get everybody on the same page. That's what I show for 9th, 10th grade level writing. Then you have to come up with a unique problem statement, a problem that actually needs to get solved. What I added to it is something you can also do, and then coming up with a unique solution. This is what you have to do to like publish an article. That's the exact process. Now, the book on that is The Craft of Research has sold over 1 million copies since 1995. Now, the kids that I know that, some of them freaking hate AI, but their bosses love it. So they go into a job, they don't know a damn thing out of it, they don't even know what a ChatGPT is. Within 2 weeks, they're training their peers in AI. I've had that happen multiple times. And people are like, how did that happen? I show them the craft of research through high school. Just so you know, no private school in the United States touches it because it's too advanced. And then my kids go off to college and they practice it for 4 to 5 years. Then they go out in the workforce. And one example I like to give, the kid calls me up. He says, I don't know what to do. I said, well, pick an AI model. I don't care which one. Figure out context. And he's going back. He's talking to it. He's typing. He's frustrated. He goes back and forth for about a day, then he figures out context. Then I say, come up, go and figure out a problem statement that's unique, something you can do that needs to get done. So he does that for about a day. Then he comes, then I tell him to do the solution. He figured that out. Then he explains it to his boss, and the boss thinks that this is freaking genius. And then he's showing his peers how to go through this, but they don't know what the heck the craft of research is. He's like, how did you get through high school? I get through college. Some with grad degrees don't know what is. So he has to teach them what that is, explain how to do the process that he came up with. And then the boss is thrilled because everybody's drastically more productive.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah. And that's from a book that came out in 95.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, there's a common misconception that AI is new. It was, I want to say, 1950s, late 1950s, first introduced, I believe. It might have been early 60s, but it's been around for a very long time. I actually worked for, well, when I was at one of the facilities I worked for, a big part of what they were doing was voice patterning and recognition. And that was all, you know, machine learning and AI as well. And what, again, people don't realize that this is not new. Just some breakthroughs have occurred that were bigger than anyone had predicted or hoped for in the last few years. So,
yeah, we're on a trajectory. I'm very skeptical when people report about leaked things, but when it's like a major, I think it was like Fortune or one of those major publications. Anthropic had a little boo-boo where they left like thousands of documents that people could download for somebody at the company made a mistake. They're coming out with a new model called something M something or other that is so powerful that it's finding cracks in online security that have been around for decades and nobody could find. So they're sending it out to all of these security people before they release it to the general public so they can harden everything. All right. And it's just going to come more and more powerful. Now, what I'm trying to tell the college kids, here's what's going, there's an economic term, 40% of them are in sub-employment. My first degree was in macroeconomics. Essentially, 40% of recent college grads are getting jobs that don't require anything close to a college education. All right, and why? Because, oh, I use ChatGPT to help me with my homework or this or that or the next thing. I said, yeah, who cares? I'm using it to the point now where the stuff that I would normally have a new college grad do, I'm just having it do it itself, and then I'm having senior people that I partnered with do the reviewing who just know what the problem is. And they say, make these changes, and then I come back and I tell AI to – I work through ChatGPT, Extended Thinking 5.4. Why? Well, a couple weeks ago, I was using Google 3.1 Pro. And then ChatGPT with 5.4 Extended Thinking came out. It was just a much better model. And then every week, I keep changing my process. Literally, I spend a half an hour to an hour a day looking at new AI stuff and playing with it to make it a little better. Why? Because I got to tell my kids so they can get a job. So when I'm so that process that I just told you, I will tell the kids when they're a senior in college. I said, okay, you're a senior. You're essentially a college graduate. I want you to start using Opus 4.6 on everything. Okay, you got to build this up for at least a month so we can go through this process. And then what I'm finding is I just showed some of my former kids who have out of college do that, and they're in positions where they have a lot of autonomy in their jobs. They have permission. I said, you have to get everything approved by your company. And they did, surprisingly, very rapidly. And they said, do you have any idea how much more productive I am? I wake up, it ran this stuff all night. They're paying $200 a month out of their own money for this. But they said it is so worth it. And they work from home. They're finishing stuff up and their boss is contacting them. And they're saying, well, where's all this? Where's this? Where's this? They said, well, it's in your inbox. But they don't send it when it's done because they're so productive. They're just kind of holding on to it. And the boss still thinks they're productive. And they're out for a walk. Or one of them said he went to the movies, told his boss he was in a meeting, and everything he wanted was in his inbox. That's how productive this process is making folks. And isn't it the best one? Not by a long shot. I'm still learning that. But one thing I've learned is you can forget about keeping up because there are a few podcasts that I listen to every day on this. And these guys are, you know, the top of the top, and they can barely keep up. And I'm just like,
do you think there's ever going to be a point where certain fields of study or employment are just not even needed anymore because it AI goes from an assistant to just replacing that person altogether.
Because I'm just gonna put on it. Let's take what you do. Tell me a speciality that you do for work that you're really freaking good at, that you love doing, that you're really good at. What is it?
Auto mechanic. I don't think there's an AI that could do that.
Okay.
Maybe the diagnostic part, but not the actual wrenching part.
Now, it may diagnose certain things, but how, if you're putting in some gizmo into another gizmo, I'm just saying that because with auto mechanics, I am grade A stupid. Okay. I'm just horrible at it. Right. Your judgment on does this work? Does this make sense? The AI can get close to what you do, but it can't understand your own style of how to make things run better, more efficiently. All right. Mm-hmm. Or what to do when the damn thing just looks crazy. Like, for example, there are people whose job it is, they have these autonomous cars. And then the damn thing just gets stuck and they go and they say, oh, they clip on and then they get it out. They get it on stuck. And then they go to the next one. That's literally their job. So just, you know, everybody thinks where AI is going right now, we're pretty much doing nothing. We're not even at 1% of where we're going. We're at like 0.001. We're nothing. Because right now, the next major thing is with the chips is we're going to cool them with hot water. That's just coming out, but these aren't the real chips.
It's not hot water. It's actually been around for quite some time, fully submerged blade systems. One of the things that the company I work for does, right? And so they've been around for a while. They're in data centers, and that is a huge thing. It is cool water that gets turned into hot water. But yeah, they're fully submerged. It's quite an interesting way to work on a machine, because liquid in machines typically are a big no-no, right?
Yeah. Well, that was just one thing that Jensen was saying, how the next set's going to be hot. Well, whatever. But the main thing is these are still chips designed for video games, just a souped up version. The real AI chips were hoping to get into production by 2029. And instead of being the size of our fingernail, they're going to be the size of a dinner plate. Okay. So when that happens, the cost of cooling these things will drop drastically. The amount that they can do will go up tremendously. And people, I just want you to think of an analogy in history. The steam engine. It made things drastically cheaper, so we used much more of it. We had much more of abundance. So if you know the craft of research and you can go and apply this, this was just from one podcast I recently listened to, and they did some analysis of the job market. What they were finding is people that were senior, that really knew what they were doing, really knew how to use AI, literally to 5-10x their productivity, literally, is that for every 3.1 jobs that were out there, there was one person to fill. It took about 146 days to fill a position, and people were asking for $250,000 to $400,000, and they were getting it. But this was not a 9-to-5 job. They wanted them there a lot longer, but they knew how to come in. This is just not coding, engineering. This is marketing. This is a lot of, like, let me give you an example. There was a guy who just was good at spreadsheets, but not like the expert of experts. Anthropic injected things into, Anthropic is now in Microsoft Excel. All right. And he did literally a financial sheet that would take a Goldman Sachs analyst like 8 hours to do. He did it in 40 minutes and then had a check by a Goldman Sachs analyst. And he said, this would have taken me about a day to do, about 8 hours. All right. That's how powerful these things are. And it just means we're going to be able to get more and more stuff done, but it doesn't mean that there's going to be less and less needs for humans. But there's going to be a huge need for well-trained humans. And if you don't want to make this shift to using artificial intelligence, I'll just let you know, my younger sister hates the damn thing. So she got a job that will not be replaced by AI for decades. People are afraid that AI robots are going to come in and become car mechanics. So Boston AI robot, whatever, I forget the name of it.
Dynamics.
It's 88. What's that?
Dynamics.
Dynamics.
Boston Dynamics.
It's 88% owned by Hyundai. So they got a man-sized robot in a factory right now. They're testing it out. 5'9". It can lift 70 pounds. And it can pick up something, turn it around, and put it on the next table. And then pick up another thing and put it on the table like 6 inches apart or whatever. That's it. Not the complicated stuff of being a mechanic. Right. I know that Elon Musk, who's for his robots, the biggest problem they're trying to figure out is the hand. How do you grab? Well, how do you do this?
They just figured that out. It wasn't them. I believe it was a company in China that figured it out. And they just introduced a robot that has it has amazing dexterity. And part of that was putting a nut, threading a nut onto a bolt, and then screwing it all the way down. And then doing that with another different size nut and different size bolt, and then with a wing nut on a bolt, right? And then they went through the whole thing again, and with one hand, it did all three. Yes. And I mean, blazing facts. So if you think about that, I honestly think the idea that there is a safe job is absolutely not true, because robotics are now, I mean, now you've got, you know, people can buy a robot for their home that will do a lot of tasks in a home for about $10,000. Give it another 10 years, that'll be a, you know, $1,000 robot. I mean, you pay that for your phone, right? You think about industrial application, you can actually have these things. If you go far enough, you can actually have an AI retool a manufacturing plant, create the parts that the robots can assemble to make a better robot that can then go and retool the factory with new robots that do what is needed, and create another set of robots that could go out and be plumbers, that could be mechanics, that could be painters, that could be welders, et cetera, right? So I think there's a lot of thought that goes into this, and people understand that there's a need to protect the ability for the human to have something to do that is worthwhile for their being, right? And a job is a part of that, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be for a company. It could be entrepreneurial. It could be, you know, just this is the stuff I do on a day-to-day basis, and like, you know, living on a farm, right? Those are tasks that you have to do every day, right? But we get great satisfaction as human beings out of accomplishing these things. And so hopefully people are actually really thinking about this, because I don't really see any boundary that AI with machine learning and robotics cannot take on.
Well, let me give you an example with advanced manufacturing. I live right outside of Albany, New York. And there's a guy called Jeff Lawrence who quarterbacked what we started about 25 years ago in advanced manufacturing. So they actually started at our local community college, Hudson Valley Community College, with a lot of state funding. And I can tell you, people that go into that 2-year degree will come out and there are 4 to 5 jobs waiting for them. Right now, I think they're starting at around 50, 60 grand. Within whoever amount of time it takes to become senior, they're making like 120 grand. And those figures are a couple of years old. All right. So you have to know how, instead of 5,000 people from the 50s, it's now like 200 people. And you have to know how to work with the machines. All right. But everybody's having this view that, oh, AI is going to take over everything. I don't see that. I see that the biggest issue with humans is, do we know, I'm just talking about intellectual work now. Is this correct? what changes need to be made so this is correct. I think AI can get better and better at helping us do drafts, but we have to make the final decisions. And yes, it's making me vastly more productive. Okay. Now, my team, I have two assistants. One has a master's in teaching English. One is a PhD candidate in education. I used to have a bunch of other people, which we no longer use. They were college kids, grad students, and they decided to self-select and move on. And have I gotten rid of my people? No. I'm actually going to have to bring some more people on, but I'll tell you exactly what I'm looking at. Next person I'm looking to bring on has a master's degree as an English teacher and 7 years of teaching experience, teaching middle school English. Those are the type of people I'm going to bring on because I can show them how to do the AI stuff very quickly. But when it comes to customer service, I want to provide a very high level of customer service. So I can have the AI suggest things to make them a lot more productive, but I want an experienced human looking at everything that comes through to send out. And that's, I don't care. I'm not doing the, one person said, well, here's the idea. You can record an answer to a question, because the people ask almost the same questions over and over again. You can record that, make it really good, and then restrict the AI to answering just the exact questions you're asked and send the rest to a human. And I'm like, no, I'm having a human review everything because I want, and I can tell you that's important to people. Let me give you another example about.
That is one area that, at least to date, and hopefully it will remain, that AI, it's the area that centers around care, empathy, not sympathy, empathy, because AI can sympathize with you. It will. It'll do a great job of sympathizing with you, but it has no concept of what empathy is, or really morals or ethics either, other than what's been programmed into it, like, that's immoral, don't do that, right? And here's a list of the immoral, but it doesn't have a concept of, well, that's not in the list, therefore it's not immoral, right? It's not unethical, and it doesn't have a concept of care. So when you look at things that are more, and by golly, it's really good at creating images and videos and things like that. But the human portion of that, right? The ability to actually create from imagination is, I think, at least now, far superior. So those are the areas I see humans as being largely untouched in this, right? This will be an augmentation tool only. And I think in general, it'll be used as augmentation. But, you know, there is some concern, right? I mean, companies don't get into business to make their employees happy. They get into business to make dollars. And if I can spend $1 million on an AI and $1 billion on a factory retool that uses AI, and I can replace 100,000 employees, I'm going to do it, right? I wouldn't personally, but that's, I guarantee you, 99.5% of the companies out there will absolutely do that, right? That being said, we're nowhere near that, right? We will get there at some point, and maybe people will change minds, and maybe thinking will change, who knows, right? But I think it's one of those things. I caution people about being too short-sighted about what it can do or what it will be capable of, because of the fact that you have to consider the fact of robotics and machine learning as well as AI, right? Those three things together are exceedingly powerful, and the capabilities far exceed our ability to do things like produce stuff, right? Or can.
Yeah, well, what I try to do with let me give an example. There's one family I'm working with. The woman's daughter is a very gifted painter. She's already doing individual commission paintings in her early teens. And she doesn't want to turn it into a business. But I said, okay, great, keep her working on that. But when she's ready, you know, you can just go to go to Coworker and have it create a custom website for you. People willing to pay for work. Her next oldest son is, you know, the traditional, he's going to be an engineering science student at Big State U. Okay. And when I'm looking at that, I said, okay, you need to, the first 2 years are the same for everything. It hasn't, the engineering science hasn't changed really in the last 30, 40 years. All right. Once you get him to be able to read and write at the 10th grade level, you know, start having him go through the craft of research, get used to it, because then he'll be fine. Because once you start publishing and you can add value, he'll be fine. Her next son is probably going to be a head and hands type guy. And he's not going to enter the field for probably another 10 or 12 years. And one of the surprising things I found is the quickest way to a six-figure income is being an electrician. And I know AI is going to have things, and there will be some robotics, but I don't think we're not going to trust them. Here's some things that I found. I think at his point, he'll probably be guiding robots and telling them what to do. But here's one interesting thing about families, about lives on the highway. Tragically, if you get in your car, and let's just wave the magic wand. You're a CEO of a Fortune 1000 company, and you got a lot of insurance. And you kill somebody by literally a car accident. They might go after you for a couple of mil. When AI does it, when you have one of those driverless people do that, Tesla just got hit for, I think, $230 million. Literally, mm-hmm. It's like 100 times. We have, as a species, such zero any acceptance of getting killed or hurt by one of these things. So you see all those little things running up and down the road delivering food? Imagine they hit somebody. Okay. I mean, it's just, it's crazy what people do going after that. So that's one aspect. The other one is one of the stupidest things I've seen out there with people with money is they will go and have an AI avatar themselves. They'll work with AI to come up with a script, then they just dump it in and they don't have to spend the time getting on camera. Mm. Okay. And there was, people hate it once they find out. So there was an economics professor said, I'm going to stay ahead of AI. His writing has dropped by 75 to 90%. And he does a lot of podcasts. And he does a lot of in-person. What I noticed when he's doing podcasts is there's always something about him that looks a little disheveled. So you know it's real. Like you look behind me, you see an outlet. You see a little cat hair on my hat. This is me. This is not I'm not freaking AI. And people know that I'm not freaking AI because of those things. All right. Yeah. That's one of the key things because people, they find out it's AI, they just turn it off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there is a lot of that, right? I think it incenses us a bit in the fact that it's a fake creativity, right? There's something to the creativity of a human being on camera, speaking to another human being or speaking about something to, you know, an audience. Whereas once it becomes AI, then it takes that creativity out of it and it just becomes a machine, right?
Yeah. And people ask me, do I study this? And what I tell them is this is the most popular book I use to teach dyslexics to read. Walt Disney, yeah. The Triumph of the American Imagination. Okay. 1,000 pagers, okay? Takes me 1 to 3 years to get a kid through this book. People are like, 1 to 3 years? Yes, but then that's written for 17-year-olds. So when they get done with this, it's like a 17, they know how to read. And I literally show them how you go into Disney World. There's the Disney magic is two universal themes, and I show them how to discover both. And then I show them, I've had kids that have went to apply to work for Disney, and they can go in and say, well, this is what Walt would have done to apply the traditional Disney magic. And here's how you do it. And they would start spewing out ideas. Now, if one of those ideas hit, that might be worth $500,000. It might be worth $1 million. It might be worth $10 million. That's something that I doubt we're going to see AI creating. Now, what this is going to do to us is this is going to push us to be more and more creative. My workflow, I was stuck in October of 2025 for months. Now, just in the last week, I've now moved to this, and now I have, you know, I wake up every morning and I have AI give me a lot of drafts to work on. And it just, I get a lot more done and I'm a lot more efficient. And so I have a lot more free time. All right. And this is going to change in the next 3 months, in the next 6 months. I mean, 6 months now feels like an eternity. And most people have no idea what I'm talking about. What do you mean you wake up and the AI has your work done for you? I'm like, and if you don't kind of keep up with this, then you're going to be one of those people with these horrible jobs. Let me give you an example with China. Everybody's so afraid China's going to take things over. China now, I think last year they had 12.5 or something million college graduates and 7.9 million births. Okay. And 40% of the jobs in major Chinese cities are delivering food. They're gig jobs, which aren't jobs. Okay. And it's just really tough. So, and then they're creating all these robots to replace things in factories. So they need less. Yeah, it's all sorts of problems over there. So what I'm trying to say is in the United States, in other Western countries, if you kind of keep up with AI, I'm just talking about for intellectual workers, and you can be very productive, is that the best data I could find is there's three jobs waiting for you for each person who's qualified to do it. If you're new coming out of college, this shocked the hell out of me. There was a major podcaster who a couple of months ago walked into a bunch of senior people and they said, if you're doing something new, something you haven't really, you don't know everything about, have you run a deep research report before you start doing it? And out of hundreds of people, two people raised their hands. So I tell the kids, anytime you're doing anything, run a deep research report and read it. I limit mine to 3,500 to 4,000 words on Anthropic and read it. But then if you're doing really important things, I will do a deep research report sometimes at the paragraph and sometimes even at the sentence level as a guide when I absolutely have to get it right. And yes, when you're new, read the things. For me, I just summarize it because I know what to do because I really know my field really well. And I had one of my kids do that. And he said his boss thinks he became relatively senior in about 9 months. And he's ahead of me on doing this AI thing where it's doing things overnight. And guess who keeps getting promoted with a big salary? He actually left his company because he went in and said, I want you to double my salary. And they said, no. So then he went out in the marketplace and he found somebody that after testing him, who had said, we'll be happy to double your salary. They were thinking they're going to have to go higher. And he moved on. He said, well, maybe I'll be here for a couple of years and ask somebody else to double it again. But he's way beyond me in AI right now. And I just started doing this. But the people who aren't trying to keep up, I don't know what's going to happen to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially if you're in any kind of a, you know, STEM field. Right. That's the key piece there. If you're in one of those fields and you're not, you know, gaining experience playing with models and you know, different ones, you know, I would strongly urge you to do so. Right. And there are plenty of them out there. You can, you know, if you don't have the funds for, you know, say a, you know, big subscription or something, you can go and self-host. You can go to a virtual private server is what they're called, or a VPS. You can get one for $5 a month, right? That's a quarter of the cost. And most of them have a Docker panel that you can just load Claude into. So you've got your own self-hosted version of Claude right there for $5 a month. and then you can, you know, you can kind of avoid some of the costs, right? So, you know, obviously you're limited in what it has available for information, but again, you know, to start out, that is something.
Yeah, and sorry, it's getting a little dark where I am. Yeah, so one thing that I tell some of my students who really wanted to learn, I would tell them to go over to Udemy, U-E-M-Y, pick something they're interested in or pick something they're good at. Like one of my kids says, I don't like what I do, but I'm damn good at it. All right, take the courses. Go to one of those job boards, figure out, you know, put up some things, get some jobs. And then one of my kids did that. And before you knew it, he was actually making enough money. And right now he's on a $200 a month Claude subscription. I mean, open a Claude subscription and $20 a month on ChatGPT. And he's making thousands of dollars a month. And he says, I'm not going to college because on my current pace, I should be making $20,000-$30,000 a month within the next year. You know, he's moving past.
Nice.
He's moving, but he's just getting so much. But you can start doing it that way. I knew so many people that trained themselves to do the basics really well with Udemy. And you never pay full price on Udemy. There's always a sale. I had one of the kids I recommended. Mom came back and said, they have an 80% off sale. And she said, give me a list of courses for him. I said, okay. It was 23 courses. All right. And each course she spent about 20, 30 bucks on, which was a huge write down. She said, for less than $1,000, she went through and he went through all the courses several times, took like 6 months, and came out and he started sending stuff out. One of the companies says they like the work. Are you local? He said, well, yeah, I'm 10 miles from you. They said, come in. They gave him another test. They just offered him a job. They said, hey, we'll pay. He's dyslexic. And they said, yeah, we'll pay $200 a month for this and $20 for that. You need anything else? Why? Because it used to be we needed an administrative assistant. You know, 50,000, 60,000, you know, total all-in cost, probably 80 grand a year now with health insurance and all the other stuff. They're happy to pay a couple hundred bucks a month. They're happy to pay $500 a month. They said compared to the quality of work they're getting, because it's so much more productive being, when you're dyslexic, when you're in your specialty and you know what you're doing, we have 2.5 times that front part of the neural activity in the brain. It becomes really unfair. And a lot of my former students are telling me that their employers are so happy to pay the extra money. They said, this is nothing. What else can we do for you? Because they're so much more productive. One of them came back and said, they went to a new employer and they said, I'm sorry, I'm so bad with my writing. They said, is there anything we can do? I said, well, if I could use Anthropic. They said, they looked at his work, looked at the productivity, and they came to him and said, yeah, after a couple of weeks, we do the $200 seat version? And he's just thrilled because his work is still reviewed by an administrative assistant, but she uses AI, but it's so quick now because the quality, so they thought it was they said, listen, for what you're producing, this is nothing.
Yeah, and on top of that, I mean, a lot of companies nowadays, if they aren't already there, they're on their way to having their own, AI, right? Depending on what version they go with, et cetera. But, you know, there's certainly that at an ever-increasing number of organizations that have their own, at least one model internally, right? So, yeah. I definitely think it's something people should focus some time on.
Well, most companies, if you actually go in and see what they're actually doing, the vast majorities of companies are, it's like they're operating in 2024 if they're lucky. Most of them are 2023. It's just they know nothing about it, and when they start it's not even the spread out there is next to nothing. And that's what shocks me.
Yeah, I, that's changing rapidly.
It's rapidly changing, but it's just, still yeah. so far. Oh, I go and I'm trying to explain the workflow I had back in October, which to me again is ancient times now. And people are like, what do you mean? What is this? What is all? It's just shocking.
Okay. Yeah, I'd honestly be quite amazed if by 2030, over 90% of the companies out there aren't hosting their own models. I really would be very amazed.
I think you're going to be amazed because while it's spreading, a lot of people just don't, they know a fraction of what I know. And my web guy, who's just brilliant at all forms technical and marketing, I know a fraction of what he knows. Okay. I'm just, this is the workflow that I have to build myself, design for myself as a dyslexic so I can show others how to do it, especially my clients. But what I'm finding shocking is the kids that go out that I've trained in AI, they will go in and as they said, they know a decent amount of what I know, but they don't keep up at the level that I am. They go in and they're all of a sudden they're training their whole team how to do AI because they don't even know what they know. They start talking about context problem solution, original problem statement and original solution. They're just shocked. And they go in and their bosses think that they just hired some genius. Like, this book came out 31 years ago. So yeah, the adoption is still very far. You have some that are really at an elite level. I mean, heck, there's one company I heard about. There's three guys. They spend $1,000 a day per employee, and the AI not only creates everything, it checks everything, and they just ship it. I mean, a lot of these companies. What really got me in sales was there's one particular company, they used to do $300,000 to $500,000 per employee, and the sales guy got paid like $80,000 a year. Now the same sales guy's doing $3 to $5 million, and they're paying him $300,000 a year. Because AI is doing everything to just keep putting them in front of people to speak to. It's doing all the other, I'm like, so yeah, that's where it's going. I just want people to go ahead and prepare so you can be one of those on the right side of this, so you can do much better economically. And for those of us who are on the right side, we'll be just fine. I'm just scared about everybody else.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, hey, one more wonderful conversation. I think this is probably a good place to start winding it down. And just like last time, one of the questions we always ask our guests, and we're going to hit you with it again. So you can keep the same response or different. Throughout our lives, there's someone that's made an impact, historical figure, sixth grade science teacher, author, mom, doesn't matter. But we like to give our guests the ability to shout out a person that was influential to them.
His name is Professor James Holmes. He's just so everybody knows quickly about his story. He didn't learn to read until he was in fifth grade. No way was he going to go on to college until in 11th grade he entered a science fair competition in the United States in the 1950s, won the state of Indiana, got third place in the country. Then all of a sudden he was an A student, went on to college, went on to get his PhD at the top economics program in the world, University of Chicago, with their top scholarship. He said he stopped counting rewriting his dissertation at 100. After that, he always had a co-author. And he taught me how to think in causality. If it wasn't for him, I would be nothing, nowhere. I wanted to go to SUNY college at Plattsburgh. It fit me perfectly. I went to Buffalo instead to work with him. And it was his intermediate macroeconomics class where we had analyzed the Great Depression and explain it, which we all did very poorly, even the best among us. And if it wasn't for him, I would have ended up, I would have probably been sweeping floors at McDonald's if it wasn't for him.
Well, awesome. Well, that's a good shout out right there. All right. What do you have going on? What are you working on? Where can people find you?
Well, my book's about ready to come out. Famous last word of any author. We're doing our last round of edits. It's called If You Can Write, You Can Read. It's coming out on Amazon Kindle within a couple of weeks. And for those of us who want to contact me, the best thing to do is go to dyslexiaclasses.com. That's with an S, dyslexiaclasses.com. There's a button that says download free guide. Just fill out 3 questions and set up a time to speak with me. It's a half hour. It doesn't cost you anything.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you once again for giving us another chunk of your time. We really appreciate it. And I think, you know, we'll probably have you back on here again as well.
I'll be happy to do that.
We'll wait for your book to come out. Maybe we can talk about your book and get into that and listen to what that process was like and everything else.
I will tell All you, right. as a dyslexic, it was very interesting.
Oh, I can imagine. This is very structured writing and okay. You've got the creative form and yeah, it's kind of a mix of the frontal and the you know, the rear lip. Yeah, you're probably.
Oh no, what I did is I wrote it with AI. It was ChatGPT 03 Pro at the time. Then I had 2 ghostwriters completely rewrite it. And then I went to one of the top co-authors. Her name was Evelyn White Bay. She was on the New York City Dyslexia Task Force. And then she rewrote it. And now we're going through a final edit. So that was generally my process.
Well, that's awesome.
And no, AI is nowhere close to writing a book on its own. It's good to get the first, instead of going to a ghostwriter where they asked you, what are your visions for the book? What are you thinking? I just wrote it with AI and I said, here. And then she came back with something that it didn't look anywhere close to it, but it gave her a lot. It was a lot easier for her to work with. She just said, there's a long list of stuff that needs to be corrected, but at least she had a draft to go from.
Nice.
Wonderful. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Space Tomatoes podcast. We're everywhere. You know where to find us. We are now also hosted off of fountain.fm. Go check us out. We've got a chat group in there as well. If you'd like to join, just go log on, join our chat. That'll be fun. If you like us, give us thumbs up. If you didn't, give us thumbs down. Leave a comment. Tell us we suck. I don't care. Right? And remember, wherever you are, whenever you're watching this, have an amazing day.
Thanks for coming, Russell. See
you, everybody. Thanks for having me.